So first of all, thank you, Lord Dick Newby, for coming onto the conversation. And just to give it a bit of an explanation about who you are the leader, or are, I should say, the leader of the Liberal Democrats in the House of Lords, and you were the National Secretary of the SDP between 1983 to 1988. And so this week we're doing a sort of series on the SDP. So we've been speaking to different people who were involved in the SDP. We previously spoke to Lord Owen about his views on the SDP. And we'll also be speaking to some people in the Liberal Democrats as well about their views. So the first question I really wanted to ask is how you got involved yourself in the SDP. I know you used to be in the civil service, and then you left to join the Social Democrats. So sort of what meant that you decided to leave, and why did you think that the SDP was sort of the party for you, not the Liberals or the Labour Party?
At the time, I'd been a member of the Labour Party for 10 years. I'd been very much involved in the Labour Party internal debates about Europe, and I played a big part. I spent a lot of time in the referendum campaign in 75, campaigning for our membership of the EU. I had been active in the Labour Party until almost the point that I left the civil service, but I got promoted to a point where I couldn't be politically active. I was working on tax policy, and in 1981, when the SDP was formed, several things happened at the same time. First of all, the government was introducing a policy which it knew would push up unemployment. And I, along with most civil servants working on economic policy, thought that was a bad thing to do. So there was a lot of dissatisfaction about that. The SDP was in the process of being formed. I knew all the people, or a lot of the people who were involved, because I'd been on the committee of the Labour Committee for Europe for a long time. I was very sympathetic to what they were doing. I rang up a man called John Roper, who was the first whip for the SDP, an MP for a Lancashire seat, and said, is there anything I can do? And he said, well, I'm just advertising for somebody to run the parliamentary office. But if you'd like, it would be great, but if you'd like to do it, you've got to apply overnight, because nominations close, applications close tomorrow. So I applied. Lots of things came together, but it was dissatisfaction with the state of the economy, dissatisfaction with the Tories, and a sense that Labour had very much lost its way, really.
So, of course, after that, the Limehouse Declaration came out, and there was heavy focuses in that on things like electoral reform, on devolution as well. So how much impact did that declaration have, and especially the then launch of the SDP that carried on many of those sort of fundamental principles? So what kind of impact did that have on politics at the time?
Well, it had it sent a shockwave through politics. There was a huge amount of interest in what the SDP was doing, because there was a lot of dissatisfaction with, at that stage, the Thatcher government, which was very unpopular, and the Labour Party, which was also very unpopular. So the fact that you've got four former cabinet ministers who were prepared to make a big throw of the dice and start something new was very, very refreshing. And for a lot of the people involved, very exciting in a way that you can't now easily explain. I mean, there was a real, for the period between 1981 and the 83 election, there was a huge sense of excitement and a sense that you could change things. I think that went through the country, really. That's why we did so well in by-elections in that first period.
So, of course, after that, you had the Falklands War, and that in itself is often seen as sort of that turning point for the SDP, and the point at which the merger with the Liberals almost became a not quite an inevitability, but close to that. So do you think that it was the Falklands War that was the cause of that decline, or was it the use of first past the post? And there's been sort of plenty of other explanations, but why do you think there was that decline and
what the Falklands War did was it transformed public perceptions of Margaret Thatcher. She suddenly became, if not a national hero, clearly a strong national leader who had bet everything on our being successful in the Falklands and won. And so she suddenly, in a country which was lacking political leadership or strong political leadership and looking for it, which is why a lot of people look towards the SDP, she demonstrated it. And so suddenly what happened was that she drew from the SDP and the Liberals a considerable part of the moderate conservative vote who'd been interested in us. At the time, I was in charge of, amongst other things, the membership department for the SDP, and the number of new members was running steadily till the Falklands, and then it halved in a week. And we never went back, because she'd taken the political initiative, and we never quite got it back.
So do you think now that first past the post and that sort of system really sort of acted as a stint on the growth of the SDP, of course, because, you know, they were getting massive vote shares and yet were getting almost nothing back in seats.
Yeah. Well, the ludicrous thing in 1983 was that the Alliance got, I think, 23 seats, and we were only 2 points behind Labour, who got over 200. So we were at a point, there were opinion polls on the weekend before polling day, which suggested we might just overtake Labour. It would have been quite possible for us to overtake Labour and have got 30 seats and for them to have got 200. So obviously, it was a huge, huge drag anchor on us. Our problem was simply that our vote was spread too evenly over the country.
Yeah. So one other thing that we did was we, as I said, spoke to Lord Owen recently and sort of asked him about his opinion, which I think is almost fairly well known now about the merger between the Liberals and the SDP. And of course, his argument would be that, you know, the merger effectively sort of stifled that voice of Social Democrats, which in some ways is quite funny, given that, you know, I'm speaking to you as the leader of the Liberal Democrats in the House of Lords. But how much of a voice do you think the SDP and the social democratic tradition has within the Liberal Democrats today?
Well, I think it had a very strong voice. And I don't think, frankly, the main reason that David Owen would pose the reason the merger was because he feared for social democracy. He couldn't stomach the idea of of what he saw as an over-democratic party that was soft on defence. Those were his principal arguments at the time. I mean, the interesting thing is, if you look at the leadership of the Lib Dems, as I'm looking at you now, straight ahead of me, there are the portraits or photos of leaders of the Lib Dems in the House of Lords. And it goes Roy Jenkins, Bill Rogers, Shirley Williams, Tom McNally were the first four. So they were all SDP. Charles Kennedy obviously was SDP. And actually, very quickly, the Merge Party stopped worrying very much about whether people had been Liberals or SDP. And the reason was, and this is why David Owen is wrong, is that there was no fundamental difference of view on tax and spend and on social democratic values between Liberals and Social Democrats. The Liberals came from a different tradition, although arguably the new Liberals in the early 20th century were the first Social Democrats. But there was no schism in the new party. There were personal differences, obviously, but no huge ideological schism between the two.
So in an interesting sort of question about the merger itself, then, how easy was that merger? Because of course, you know, a lot of the time when I was a member of the party, there'd often be conversations about how, you know, it used to be you were a social democrat or a liberal, and now people very much just see themselves as Liberal Democrats, and there isn't that divide anymore. So how easy was it in those early days when it was two, you know, different parties coming together?
Well, the merger process was both exhausting and extraordinarily stressful because at the time, the Owenites had a majority on the SDP National Committee. And instead of doing the decent thing and saying, we lost the ballot, we're withdrawing, they stood their ground and tried to get every possible advantage from that position. So at one point, they argued that they should retain access to a proportion of the assets of the party. But the party had decided it didn't want that. So the merger process, which lasted from September to January, really, the actual negotiations were very intense. We had two constitutions. We had different ways of doing things. We had large negotiating groups. The devil was in the detail. And I was with my opposite, I was the chief executive, in effect, of the SDP, with my chief opposite number in the Liberal Party. We managed that process, but it was inevitably just very hard going because you're trying to put together two somewhat different ways of doing things.
So moving on to sort of more recent politics, I suppose, in 2019, when Change UK founded, they were almost similar to the SDP in the sense that they were a split from the Labour Party. And they had, I suppose you could almost say their tagline was an updated version of breaking the mould or effectively changing politics. So why do you think that they didn't have that same impact and that same effect, even when they launched as the SDP did?
Well, I think there are probably three reasons. First of all, there already was a Liberal Democrats. Secondly, with all due respect to them, they weren't the Gang of Four. And thirdly, they lacked the commonality of approach which people had who joined the SDP. Because the whole push came from people who've been in the Labour Party, who shared values. And in the case of Change UK, there wasn't that degree of commonality of view, really. It was a group of individuals who, for a variety of reasons, couldn't stomach being in their party anymore. But they didn't have a compelling vision for what was different between them and anybody else.
So also thinking about New Labour, which of course was the other sort of large force in politics. I mean, how much impact do you think the SDP had on it? I mean, I actually the other day was watching A Very Social Democrat, which was about Roy Jenkins and talking about how Roy Jenkins was almost describing himself as this very sort of this figure that would advise Tony Blair on how to run the party and everything else. So how much impact do you think that the SDP had on New Labour?
I think the SDP had a big impact on New Labour, not least on someone like Peter Mandelson, who I knew and know very well from university days, who was always looking over his shoulder at the SDP and the Lib Dems as being potentially a great threat to Labour. So I don't think Tony Blair needed any impetus, really, in terms of where he positioned himself, because I think he was, in my view, more of a Christian Democrat than a Social Democrat. But for people like Peter Mandelson, they were just worried that the Liberal Democrats could steal some of their clothes if they weren't careful, and that's why I think. One of the reasons why, for example, there was the Cook-McLennan talks and why Blair embraced so much constitutional reform, which in his heart he wasn't really interested in. So I think it did have, I'm not going to over-exaggerate it, they were their own people and they were substantial figures in their own right, and certainly someone like Gordon Brown wasn't very much influenced by it, but I think others were to a greater extent.
So my final question, but in terms of today, and especially you spoke earlier about sort of that sense of excitement that was built about the SDP and the change after the Limehouse Declaration happened. Is there any way that you can see that we get that back today? I mean, especially with the fact that, you know, we also have a very unpopular government at the moment that is struggling to keep one chancellor along. So
yeah.
How do we, is there any way that we get back to that under the current system?
Well, I don't think you can never replicate a historic anomaly, which is what the SDP was, frankly. Can we get a sense of excitement about what the party's doing? Well, we did in the by-election. I mean, there was a real tangible sense of excitement there. There was in some places in the local elections where we were able to, you know, fight very hard and win. The thing, it's like, you know, is there a tangible excitement in following a football team? There is when you're winning.
Yeah.
And, you know, winning is all that matters in politics at one level. I mean, obviously, you start with principles and all that, but they count for nothing if you can't persuade people. I mean, the excitement really, to me, is if we can persuade people that what we believe is the best way to run society, they agree with it. And that's always the challenge. But that's what we've got to do. We've got to be able to say, and I think now we've got a particular challenge and opportunity because we're coming out of an age of prosperity into an age of, it's not an age of austerity so much as an age of low growth, if any growth, and the country is going to be faced with really difficult decisions. So the challenge for us is how to answer the question, what is the best form of society and what is a good society in an age of tight finance? And that I think a lot of the things we talk about, community, participation, fairness, tolerance. Those are the things that people want in their society. And what we've got to do is to explain that at a time when people are feeling very uncertain and they're thinking to themselves, I'm not going to be able to do things as I did in the past. I'm going to have to draw in my financial home. We've got to be able to persuade them that our vision of that fair, tolerant, open society offers them the prospect of a better life at a time when they're not going to achieve a better life simply because they're going to become more affluent. Because the truth is, for a lot of people, for the foreseeable future, they're not.
Well, thank you so much for answering the questions today and for coming on the conversation.
Pleasure.